I'm overlooking a beautiful lake surrounded by mature trees in Hereford. There's moorhens and coots on the lake, two men pottering about in a boat, but also a JCB coming towards me. And that's because I'm in an industrial estate. And I'm here to interview the artist Claire Woods, who's just moved to a studio here. The sky is flat and grey, but I know there's a lot of colour in the studio, so let's go. From Christea Roberts Gallery, Making a Mark, a podcast series exploring artists' approach to drawing and printmaking. I'm Charlotte Mullins.
Hello.
Lovely to see you.
See you.
Royal Academician Claire Woods is renowned for her large gestural paintings of still life and landscapes. Her starting point is always a photograph that she transforms into a line drawing and then reimagines using energetic strokes of oil paint. In her prints and hand-painted collages, she pushes these translations even further. And it's these works on paper that feature in her new solo exhibition, Soft Knock, at Christea Roberts.
This is that main painting space.
It's just so impressive. It's so vast. Initially, she trained as a sculptor, and the way she engages with her work is very physical. She paints on large aluminium panels laid flat on trestles on the studio floor.
When I'm actually painting, I'm not looking at the whole painting. I'm not standing back. I'm not taking breaks. I'm not thinking about how this brush mark's going to influence the whole surface. I'm literally covering the surface and I'm working from one part to the other. And when I'm actually painting, I'm only really looking at those few centimetres that I'm painting. And because I don't look at the painting until it's finished and it's dry and then it stands up, it's almost like taking a sculpture out of a mould.
You're so in the moment.
Yeah.
You have to wait till it's finished to see it.
And see whether it's worked or not.
if it has worked, then it's right
keeper.
For translation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a keeper. Great.
In the corner of the studio is a secret door, Claire.
The secret door, which was going to be a store,
which has now become a print room.
Not many artists have their own print room, because you have your own press here.
My name is Jennifer Higgy, and I'm a writer and former editor of Frieze magazine. Printmaking is very much an essential part of her practice as well. She's got a dedicated part of her studio that's devoted to printmaking. She works a lot on monotypes, which she treats as a sort of way of making sketches and working through ideas. And so often her prints will work alongside her painting. And although she works in very traditional genres, she works across landscape and portraiture and still life, she sort of infuses them with this melancholy, with this sort of visceral use of her materials. Many of her images, although they're recognizable when you spend time with them, often look like they sort of hover at the borders of abstraction and figuration. She's also a fantastic colourist.
Looking at the skies that you have in the show coming out, there are two screen prints and a collage, and this one is called The Price. So it's got that lovely yellow, almost it's almost Turner's yellow. I think you've talked about that before. But at the bottom, it looks like a sunset or a sunrise, although it also looks a bit like the world is on fire and the petrol blue clouds above it. First of all, I wanted to ask you how you achieve something that looks like a painting as a screen print. I mean, it's kind of death-defyingly difficult to achieve this level, this painterly level in screen printing.
I paint the films that they make the screens from.
You have a separate film for each colour.
Yeah. So I look at the painting, an image of the painting, and I think, and I break down the colours, just make a list. So there's a bright yellow, a dark yellow, there's a pale blue, a mid blue, a greeny blue. And then I go, okay, put the film over the photograph and then go, right, this is just bright yellow. So I just paint bright yellow.
Gosh, so, and then you'll take that film away and put another sheet.
Let that dry, yeah, put the next film on.
And how many, for example, with The Price, if you can remember?
There could be like 30 films. So it'll say film one, bright yellow, and then there'll be a piece of like A5 paper attached with bright yellow paint.
The colour you want.
And a Pantone, a close Pantone as well.
So then Bob and Advanced Graphics will work with that and create the screen print from that. That's quite, I mean, it's a very interesting way of doing it, because the way you paint, obviously there's a lot of planning in advance, but the painting on the day is quite instinctive.
It's just all executed quickly with lots of wet paint, and there's no kind of order to it at all. It's just the... So this is hard. This is really hard.
But this is almost like the foil to that way of working, because you're unpicking what you did instinctively, but you're having to do it with logic and rationality. And
and then that goes to Bob, and then he does his half of the collaboration.
And creates something that's really painterly in the end result. So it still has your painterly sense.
Yeah, because I made the film.
You get the impression that she paints in broad strokes. I think it's the intensity of the mark making. You're face to face with it, and usually the subject matter seems to be bursting out of the frame.
Alan Cristaire founded the Alan Cristaire Gallery in 1995. It became Cristaire Roberts Gallery in 2019, where he is co-director.
If she's doing a painting of a forest, you're in the forest. There is no release from the intensity of the work. With the screen prints, it's the challenge of collaboration. It's moving backwards and forwards between printer and artist. And I think there's a sort of frisson there. It's like handing over your baby to somebody else.
I wanted to go back briefly to talk about that moment when you started working with Advanced Graphics, because I think you've been working with Cristaire Roberts for 8 years now on printing and the collages. And when you started doing prints with them, they weren't really part of your practices at all.
No, not at all. I like lithography. I really like the closeness to painting. Mm. But the screen print felt like a real challenge because it's very hard-edged. It's very on or off. Lines, graphic, very hard, very, very different to my work.
I like the way you describe it as a challenge, because in your painting up to that date, you would push yourself in scale, or you'd push yourself in how you painted. So the challenge is part of its attraction at the beginning.
Yeah. I feel like I need to be progressing in some way.
This one, Midway, the colours to me are the colours of injury. So the pale pink makes me think of calamine lotion, which you dot on chickenpox. Or the purple, the plum down here, is like the colour of a bruise. And again, the sky is that kind of cool, petrol-y colour. Can you tell us a bit about why you've chosen these particular skies?
Well, when the Ukraine war started, right at the very beginning, I was taking screen grabs of the news reports because of the skies. And I remember when I was looking at... World War One. I was looking at a lot of poetry from World War One and battlefield photographs and accounts that the sky changed for people. The sky was supposed to be a place of contemplation, of heaven, where God was, where good people went when they died. You know, it's this idea that the sky was a good place, but it was otherworldly. It wasn't human. And then with planes and bombs, and it suddenly changed.
These are really fantastic prints. And I think that one of the really interesting things about them is the way they sort of hover at this borderland of ambiguity. The studies of clouds could also be studies of smoke trails. Claire is very interested in the news, but she's also been very informed by earlier British modernism around, say, the First World War, with artists like Paul Nash, who did many studies of sort of ravaged landscapes. And so, as with much of her work, there's a sort of sense of threat almost. These clouds could be lit up brightly and touched with light from either explosions, bomb explosions, or from a sinking sun or a rising sun.
What you see is not absolutely what you get. When you do spend more time with them, these layers of further emotional experience begin kind of unpeeling in some ways. My name is Simon Wallace. I'm the director of the Hepworth Wakefield in Yorkshire. There's nothing sentimental about it. There's always an interesting set of emotional resonances going on in the work. And, you know, some of these new pieces that concentrate largely on cut flowers in various vessels, that could end up being arrested at a very sentimental level, but it doesn't feel like that at all. Interestingly, she's managed to go back to these very basic subjects that, you know, preside throughout art history. Painting flowers is such a basic thing that so many artists have been drawn to do, and yet making it completely fresh and new again, and something that she reinvents and that we get to empathise with in looking at these works. So yeah, an interesting set of emotional registers operating at once in the works. They have a really rewarding complexity.
Claire has collected thousands of photographs, both found images and her own examples. She keeps them in a digital database, but prints out dozens at a time, pinning them up on her studio wall as future inspiration.
We're standing in front of your big wall of images. I can see skies, beautiful bouquets of flowers, and then next to it, horrendous war damage. I mean, it's a real range. There's images from World War One.
Well, this is World War One, and this is the Ukraine, so it's so visually similar.
It is.
It's shockingly
similar. I mean, they're like the
it?
Nash paintings, when you just have the trunks of wood coming up from the war-torn background.
I've got this magnetic board where I attach everything that I'm thinking about working on. A lot of these won't ever get to past here. They go back in the trays, and then there's areas down here with like still life, self-portrait, body, what other categories do you have here? Animals, mountains.
Her collages and screen prints are always made after her paintings and are informed by them in the same way that the paintings are informed by the initial photographs.
So you've got the original image that you would have had pinned up on your wall, and then over the top is a layer of acetate and then a black line drawing, but you've also masked out certain parts of the image too, so you're controlling the, even the...
Because there's always a cropping. All the images have to have, for me, have to feel like they're just a small part of something bigger, so they're out in the world. The edge of the canvas or panel or paper is just the edge of where that image finishes, but in reality that carries on.
That's a really lovely way of thinking about it. They're kind of a distillation, but they're part of something bigger.
Yeah.
It's fascinating to see the way Claire reworks one image over and over again, breaking it down.
I draw the line, then I draw the line again, then I cut the line, then I paint back into the line. And making the prints is just the next step on from the painting. But they can't exist without the painting.
So there's something in the painting that it still has a... it's kind of liminal. There's something
left there
for you.
Yeah, it's not finished. It's not finished.
So it's kind of in a process of change or transformation.
It's like, well, how can I deconstruct this and remake this, and how can this have another life?
With the collages in particular, the flatness of the surface, composed of hundreds of paper shapes, puts you in mind of Matisse's famous cutouts.
The collages are just basically colour and brush stroke direction. That's the only thing you have.
And you set yourself more limits because you refuse to use any paper that you haven't already painted. So you paint endless sheets of paper, but you'll only use colour that you've already painted, that's already existed in a paint.
It's just painting whatever's left over. Each piece is lifted up, work out the angle of the brush mark, put the carbon paper down, put the paper down, draw the on top.
So every bit of chance that would be what colour you choose, what you have
it's
done.
It's totally prepped.
It's a jigsaw puzzle. And behind you there's five boxes full of little tiny scraps of coloured paper.
Yeah, so this is all the paper that's been cut, and you'll notice there's little numbers and pencil lines all over them. And this is the offcuts from making the collage. So
even down to the size of smaller than a 5p piece has been cut out of this one.
I hate throwing anything away.
But there are also drawers, very organised drawers of paper at the other side of the room.
We've got yellow, black, red, pink, white,
peachy colours to cerise, cherry, almost down to red, grey.
And the editing process or the filing process is, well, where does that become red?
Yes.
And where does red become black? And it's those boundaries again of trying to work out what's beige or grey.
Yes, so, that's quite a hard one. So it's a selection process.
Claire could be described as a sort of collector of titles. And she's often jotting things down from things she might watch on TV or that she reads or a fragment of a poem or just a thought that comes to her. And so she has, you know, thousands of titles that she's collected. And she doesn't give titles to her work until the work is finished. And then she chooses one. She doesn't like to explain the particularities of the title. She likes it to sort of drift in a sort of poetic space where you can respond to the title as you will. I mean, for example, with The Price, one of these new screen prints, The Price is the title of an image of these rather possibly sinister clouds. So it's the price of what? The price of war, the price of life. You know, it's up to you to read it as you will. And, you know, one of the flowers is laughing out loud, and it's an image of exuberant flowers, but it could be also sort of laughing out loud into the dark.
About 40 years ago, I visited Helen Frankenthaler's studio in New York, and she'd kept a list of all these different phrases that appealed to her. And I remember on this specific day, she and her assistants had just finished a painting. And she said, OK, what's the next title on the list? Which turned out to be Manchester Guardian. So this painting was called Manchester Guardian. In the same way, Claire retains phrases for future use, but they're not completely arbitrary like Helen Frankenthaler's work. You know, a picture of an ice cream could be called cold front, which obviously has political overtones, but nevertheless you can make a connection.
How do you think about the scale in your work where you can get the confidence to go big, and a lot of your paintings are huge, but then with prints, and you're hemmed in by the actual size of a printing press? Or
no, because that's with the paintings, a lot of images can't be big and a lot of images can't be small, so it's like the image dictates its scale.
As I talk to you now, there's one above your head, there's a trifle, cold front, I think, and you've done a series of collages based on those paintings too, which are really a very, they illustrate your point perfectly, because they are actually small paintings of trifles, like a cross section of a trifle, but when you first see them you think they're a snowy mountain or the strata of a rock.
That's exactly what they're supposed to feel like, mountains. Or
and I think when I look at your work, I think that must be what you are drawn to in that original image. There's something in that image that allows some sense of movement between one thing and another.
Yeah, yeah. The extremes are always so interesting, that balance. And where's the meeting? Where's the midway of that?
Everything she does is very close up. And sometimes there's, you know, that can be threatening. On these ones, I find it almost funny. You know, there's a wonderful playfulness, both in the images themselves and in the titles. And I think she really captures, you know, the softness, the sweetness of puddings. You know, she draws you right into her own puddings, and almost demands that you kind of stick your tongue out and lap it up.
With Collage for Woolworth's Roses, it's framed in a pale pink frame, like the colour of sugared almonds. And when I looked at the collage, you're picking up on the pink in one tiny flower on one side. The frames are very important to you with these works.
With the collage, they're unique pieces, and I want them to be complete. So the way they're framed is actually really important. I'm not that prescriptive about framing for prints or other works on paper, but they feel quite sculptural and they feel like an object, and I need them to be contained and complete and framed. So I actually sign, I don't sign the collage, I sign the frame. So it is, that is the piece. And the colours, sometimes the colours for the frames are taken from elements of colour in the collage. A lot of the time it's totally different colours, got nothing to do with the collage. And the most recent trifle collages have been framed in aluminium, shiny frames that look like spoons.
I love that, the idea of a Sunday spoon. I mean, it's the attention to detail that, you know, you even down to the colour of the frame, it's still having a relationship with the work itself.
But that makes it complete, and it's a complete object then.
The piece that immediately grabbed me was one called Good Humour. It's a screen print. It's about 100 by 70 centimetres in scale. And if I describe it sort of bluntly, maybe it wouldn't sound that remarkable. I mean, flowers, cut flowers, fresher looking flowers than in some of her works, in what I take to be some form of glass vessel. standing on a tabletop that sort of recedes into the picture plane. I find the tones very beautiful, but also the kind of sense of, you know, what will happen to these flowers over time. Inevitably, they will die. And I guess that's part of the attraction in a way, that they are so short-lived and fleeting, just as our own lives are. You know, symbolically, it's very obviously attached to this notion of finding beauty and being beguiled by something that we know is only going to exist for this short moment. And yet, of course, in Claire's art, these works are going to, the depictions of these flowers will last for as long as the work lasts. You know, that moment is arrested and frozen in time somehow, and it's down to our imaginations to somehow imagine what would happen over the course of time with the subject matter that she's engaging with.
It's interesting with the flowers because you, I think that your interest in still life started a few years ago when you were in hospital and people, of course, send you flowers. Mm. And you realised that you suddenly started to take your own photographs again of these flowers. But most people would take them when they're at their peak of bloom. And instead you photograph them dying and at night. So they're incredibly dramatic. I mean, what led you to do that?
I think it was, I was really ill and I didn't leave the house for a couple of weeks. So I think that was it. It was in the forefront of my mind and I was there in my room and I was looking at them for a long period of time. And I think it's the same effect that lockdown had on thinking about still life and thinking about objects in the home, domestic objects or objects that we take for granted normally.
And they're kind of comforting. We think of these things as static, but I think what's interesting with as you photograph them through time, they're anything but static. They're always in a process of becoming. They're just dying, but dying. They weren't alive and dead. It wasn't binary. It was kind of a soft death.
I'm interested in the change. I like the decline, and there's an optimum point when the decline is perfect.
Which you capture in these collages and the prints of them.
Yeah.
I mean, I know an artist that means a great deal to her and it means a great deal to me, Edouard Manet. And there are a couple of quotes here that I think are so resonant with Claire's work. And Manet said, "A painter can say all he wants to with fruit or flowers or even clouds." And then he went on to say, "Bring a brioche. I want to see you paint one. Still life is the touchstone of painting." And I think that resonates hugely in Claire's work and connects it back to, you know, if you think of the moment of Manet reinventing painting and the kind of birth of a certain kind of harder modernism that was really trying to kind of marry up new physical realities that I guess were changing hugely with the development of capitalism, and connecting those back to kind of romantic spiritual senses, because for sure Manet's paintings do resonate with these interesting tensions and contradictions between something physical and metaphysical. And I think that's where I'd situate Claire's work.
Looking at Manet's work gave Claire the confidence to embrace the long overlooked genre of still life painting. In the early 1880s, he had painted the posies of flowers his friends had sent him as he lay dying of syphilis. His buttery brushstrokes and instinctive use of colour also connects to Claire's own way of working. She turned to still life seriously in 2020, but she had toyed with the idea of painting flowers as a student. At the time, she rejected it because, as a female painter, she felt it was a loaded subject, and the complete antithesis of the art of her contemporaries, young British artists such as Damien Hirst and Sarah Lucas.
It was very conceptual, not much colour. Mm. I felt quite on the periphery anyway. I was a female landscape painter, so that used a lot of colour. So yeah, I wouldn't have been painting flowers then, even if I'd wanted to.
But it's interesting when you look at them now, because you take bouquets that are dying, that have this sense of mortality within the way the flowers are behaving, or the colour of that water, that dark green water that we all know is an old bouquet.
Well, that water was from after reading correspondence from Paul Nash to his wife in the First World War, describing that colour of the water in the trenches and in the shell pools where that's stagnant. He describes that colour. So I made a painting a long time ago based on his description of that colour of the water. And it's been a hangover. It stayed with me.
That's interesting because you talked earlier about World War I poetry as well. And so you're translating very vivid memories, written memories, but using those written memories to translate them into colour, another form of translation.
There are some hand-tinted photographs, but pretty much the World War One is black and white. So to get any sense of colour is through poetry or through the war artist's paintings or through letters and correspondence. Mm.
This idea of trauma and processing of trauma and recovery from trauma does seem to be a strand that I think you can find running throughout her work. And I think it comes from a sort of, you know, quite a difficult family background, having to feel that you needed to look after yourself in some way. So somebody that has a huge reserve of energy, determination and ambition. And I love the fact that that never stops with her. You really do feel like, you know, every adversarial moment that's come up in life, as it does for all of us, but you know, she's had medical challenges, she's got a family, all those things that you need to contend with and work with to have this rich, fulfilling life. The work engages and reflects that. Someone that is absolutely never defeated or less than deeply inquisitive about the emotional state she finds herself in. And of course, we all find ourselves in. We all get depressed or frustrated or angry. And she's always inquiring somehow into those states, I think, through the works of art that she produces.
She continues to challenge herself, venturing into areas of making that few of her contemporaries have dared to consider, and pushing collage and screen printing into exciting new territories. There's a sense that it's the difficulty of achieving this that excites her, the thrill of what's to come, not the comfort of what has been.
I think she's met the challenge of marrying, you know, a discipline that in one sense is alien to her, but the kind of proof is in the pudding if you're affected by that image. I mean, it's very much to do with she's asking the audience to have an emotional response.
It's interesting with still life because of the way you choose to paint it. It made me think, oh, you're not painting it like the 17th century Dutch masters, for example, and Rachel Reusch comes to mind. And then I looked at her work, and actually there's quite a lot of cheekiness in her work. So there's flowers that have fallen out of the display, so obviously going to die, or there's a lizard eating a butterfly within the actual beautiful display. It's all going on. And then I thought about more contemporary artists like Anya Galaccio, who would put gerberas behind a screen and they would just rot and die. And that idea, instead of still life, you kind of cheating death by saying, oh, look at this beautiful display that lots of the artists historically have done, you're actually more interested in this idea of death being a sort of a process. It's going through it, another form of transformation maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot more, for me, there's a lot more to go on with the still life. It's just the beginning, I think, of how to develop it and work with it and really find out what's behind it. But still, there's a balance. There's always landscape, there's always a figure, there's always sometimes an animal. You know?
You've been listening to Making a Mark from Christea Roberts Gallery, presented by Charlotte Mullins. To find out more about Claire Woods and the work we've been discussing, please visit www.christearoberts.com.